This past summer, a friend couple announced that they were seeking a divorce. It stunned many of us in that circle. It felt like they had just gotten married. In truth, they married in 2020, a year none of us is going to ever forget. They had planned a large multi-day wedding celebration as was part of their culture. Instead, like so many couples that year, they canceled in favor of a small socially distant ceremony. Family and friends attended by Zoom. But even that small ceremony felt sacred at the time. It felt resilient. It felt like love persevering against the odds. They had already been together 6 years before. 11 years total. A relationship that spanned young adulthood, career formation, shared apartments, shared losses, shared holidays. 11 years is not nothing. 11 years shapes you. When I spoke to them each separately, what struck me most was this. Their stories matched. That's very rare. If you've ever counseled or spoken to a couple going through a divorce, their stories matched. There was no villain, no secret betrayal, no catastrophic moral failure. They weren't fighting over infidelity or addiction or some explosive rupture. Instead, they said something almost saccharine, beyond cliched. They had become different people. He had grown increasingly energized by his career. He was encouraged by new responsibilities, affirmed by promotions, animated by ambition. His work was not simply a paycheck. It was identity, trajectory, and momentum for him. She had grown into a different direction and very content in doing so. She stepped back from her full-time position in the financial sector and poured her creativity in building a really awesome Etsy store. In her eyes, it was thriving, financially modestly perhaps, but deeply meaningful. It gave her flexibility, it gave her joy, and it gave her a sense of autonomy. Then came the pivotal moment. He was offered a significant promotion. It required moving clear across the country. It required extensive travel. It was the kind of opportunity that does not come twice. At the same time, her sister had just given birth to twins. Because she mostly worked from home and had flexible hours, she became the primary caregiver for those babies. She was woven into their daily lives. He saw the promotion as moving forward. She saw staying as faithfulness. They fought, and eventually he gave an ultimatum, come with me or don't. She chose not. They parted ways on what would have been the 11th anniversary of their meeting. Again, no villain, just divergence. And divergence brings us into something what psychologists call homeostasis. In family systems theory, homeostasis refers to a system's tendency to maintain stability, its baseline, even if that baseline is unhealthy or toxic. Families, couples, friends, even friend groups unconsciously work to preserve that equilibrium, that place where they know. When one part changes, the system feels destabilized. It attempts to right itself. Think about it. If one partner begins therapy and starts setting new boundaries, the other may experience that not as growth, but as a threat. If one friend gets sober while the rest continue drinking, the group dynamic shifts. If one member of a family leaves the religion of origin, the system trembles. A couple is just simply a smaller family system. When one person evolves and the other experiences that evolution as destabilizing rather than invitational, tension builds. The system either adapts or it fractures. The same pattern appears in friendships. When someone gets married and others remain single, especially when a couple has children and their child-free friends do not. When one person deconstructs their faith while another doubles down, the system's homeostasis is threatened, and unless those involved are conscious enough to recognize change for what it is, the system resets, and it resists. Theologian James Fowler once wrote about the stages of faith development. We don't remain in one stage forever. How many of you started in another religion before you came to UU? I did as well. I consider myself a recovering Catholic. No disrespect to the Catholic faith, but it just wasn't for me. We deepen, we question, we reconstruct. But when two people grow in different places and in different directions, it can feel like betrayal, even when it's simply growth. Stephen Kessler, in the five personality patterns, draws on what psychologists often refer to as the big five traits: openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Sometimes remembered by the acronym OCEAN. Openness measures curiosity and imagination. Conscientiousness measures diligence and discipline. Extroversion measures energy and social engagement. Agreeableness measures cooperation and warmth. And neuroticism measures sensitivity to negative emotions. Research suggests that these traits are relatively stable over time. They do not radically shift every few years. They are part of our baseline wiring. They really don't change. This is the one part of us that kind of remains stable. Anecdotally, according to my own scores, I'm high in conscientiousness and incredibly high in openness. And according to the study, which was done by A.S. Gerber in 2010, that combination correlates with a both strong conservative tendency and an incredibly strong liberal tendency. Apparently, I'm just a walking paradox. But here's the thing. Even if the traits remain relatively stable, we do not remain static. Sylvia Rivera, a marriage and family therapist with Kaiser Permanente, once said in a cognitive behavioral therapy class that relationships tend to evolve cyclically. They move through the seasons shaped by our ocean profiles, our traumas, our stressors, our age, and our life stage. She noted that many significant relational shifts, breakups, divorces, estrangements, cluster around 5 to 7 year intervals. Why? Because evidence suggests that while personality traits may not completely change, they deepen, soften, or intensify during those developmental windows. We are not who we were at 25. I'm certainly not. We are not who we were at 35. And if we're honest, we are not who we will be in another 7 years. And here's the pastoral truth. That is not failure. That's just simply humanity and evolution of ourselves. We carry luggage from every close relationship to us into the next. It's not intentional, but if we don't unpack it, it accumulates. Upbringing, birth order, family scripts, trauma, previous heartbreak, all travels with us. If we don't tend to it, we begin to mistake our baggage for our identity. I know I did it. And like Barbara here, I too had a lovely relationship with a razor blade 3 times. It sucks. Life can suck. Which brings us to grace. The decisions we made in the past were right at the time that we made them. Just be done with that. Those decisions were right at the time that we made them. We were meant to make those decisions. If you believe in fatalism, great. It just follows that threat. But we made those decisions. We have to live with them. They may not have been sustainable. They may not have aged well. But they were real. And they were real for us at the time. They were made with the consciousness and resources we had at that moment. So we have to live with those decisions. In Unitarian Universalism, we declare that every person is inherently worthy and has the right to flourish with dignity, love, and compassion. That includes past versions of ourselves. The 22-year-old who didn't know what we now know now, the 32-year-old who chose what seemed wise then, the 40-year-old who is still figuring it all out. I'm 47. I ain't got the answers. And I say that with all due respect, and the fact that, yes, I have multiple degrees past my name, and I'm getting another one. Dr. Kristen Neff defines self-compassion as being kind to oneself when confronting inadequacies or difficulties. recognizing our shared humanity and holding painful emotions in mindful awareness without suppressing or exaggerating them. This is why mindfulness practice is so important. Our brains are wired with a negativity bias. We replay mistakes. We rehearse alternate histories. We spiral into what-ifs. If we are predisposed toward higher neuroticism, that spiral can almost feel gravitational, which means we're drawn toward it. But there's a difference between reflection and rumination. Reflection says, what can I learn? Rumination says, how could I have been so foolish? Reflection involves growth. Rumination reinforces shame. Self-compassion interrupts that spiral. It says, of course that was hard. Of course you made the best decision you could at the time. Of course, you are still learning. Neff reminds us that self-compassion does not come naturally in our culture. We are trained to optimize, to hustle, to improve, to outperform even ourselves. But rarely are we trained to extend ourselves mercy or grace. So how do we show up differently? We practice mindfulness. We acknowledge our thoughts without judgment, though for many of us, that alone feels like an Olympic sport, of which I'm probably a gold medalist. We focus on the breath. I prefer box breathing. Inhale for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 4, hold for 4. The geometry of breath creates a container for the chaos. We name the feelings. What am I feeling in this moment? You could be feeling sadness, regret, relief, anger, hope. We're just naming them. They're not good. They're not bad. They're just present. We write. We can journal. We become witness to our own evolution. And when we read back months or years later, we can see even in our confusion, there was courage. We are perfect beings, good at being imperfect. That may sound paradoxical, but it's deeply theological. Whether you understand the divine through a spiritual lens or a scientific one, we are beings in process. Evolution itself is a story of adaptation and revision. Growth is not linear, it is iterative. We are a different iteration from what we were before. My husband likes to say, you're Johnny 5.0. Because even in the 10 years I've been with him, our relationship has drastically changed. We are not who we were when we first got together. While the big five traits may remain relatively stable, our relationships to them change. A highly conscientious person can learn to soften perfectionism into diligence without rigidity. Gosh, I wish I was that person. A highly open person can learn to ground creativity in structure. Pretty good at that. A highly sensitive person can learn to channel emotional depth into empathy rather than anxiety. I think we can all work on that. We do not become different people. We become more skillful at being ourselves. Jennifer Healy writes, self-compassion isn't about escaping your darkness, but learning to love yourself there. The willingness to accept painful truths about ourselves is a seed of self-compassion. Self-compassion is the seed of a deeper connection with the wonder of being alive. That is the spiritual turn. Because if change is our constant companion, then compassion must be our steady guide. Some relationships will endure their evolution, others will not. That does not negate their meaning. 11 years of love do not become meaningless because they ended. They become chapters, teachers, sacred texts written in a lived experience. Homeostasis will always attempt to preserve what is familiar, but spiritual maturity asks us something more daring, not preservation at all costs, but growth with integrity. May we honor the people that we were. May we bless the people that we are becoming. May we release gratitude, with gratitude, that which no longer aligns. And may we show up for ourselves and for one another with kindness when change unsettles the ground beneath our feet. Change is not the enemy. It is the companion. May we walk with it gently. And may it be so.